and the Marine Corps Code of Conduct and the King James Bible.
I hate snakes, Doc! I hate them!
And may the Christian Lord guide my hand against your Roman popery!
And they may take our lives, but they'll never take our freedom!
We're on a mission from God.
Entitled. You want answers!
I want the truth!
You can't handle the truth! Maybe we should chug on over to Mamby-Pamby Land, where maybe we can find some self-confidence for you, you jackwagon!
Coming to you live from his padded cell high atop Bethel Church, the most heralded, the most despised talk show in all of human history. This is the talk show Hell Hates. This is Pastor Mike Online.
And coming to you live and late, but finally live, this is Pastor Mike. And I'm online with you today, talk show that Hell Hates. The more you listen, the more you know why. Good to be with you today. Glad you could join us. I'm late because I just got done doing a couple of radio broadcasts with Southwest Radio, and let me give you a calendar notification. Sweetie Pie and I are going to be working with Southwest Radio once again in, they call it Cincinnati, Ohio, but it's not Cincinnati, it's Kentucky. They're twin cities. So anyway, at the Marriott Airport Hotel, the planes land right in like the hotel parking lot, just A lot of flattened roof cars there. But anyway, that is going to be June the 7th and 8th of June. And I'm not sure how many times I'm speaking. Probably twice is what I'm guessing. But anyway, I enjoy working with Southwest Radio. I've always had a good rapport with them. And somebody here a while back sent me a question. It was like somebody told me that they had heard that something. And what it was they had mentioned one of the regular on-air persons at Southwest Radio, and this person that contacted me said that their brother had heard that this person at Southwest Radio was not just strictly King James, and that he actually called the King James only people a cult, and wanted to know if I still did things with them. And I said, well, number one, I've never heard that, for coming out of anybody there. I said, number two, that I have, in the times that I've spoken for Southwest Radio and their conferences, I've always brought in the Bible issue. It's just something I do. And, I told God years ago that I would try to give honor to His Word somehow, some way, any place that I went to. And, one of the, conferences that Lisa and I went to a few years ago was actually at a church, and the pastor was there. He was one of the speakers. And so I went up to him and I said, this is your church, so I need your permission. You let me know if this is okay. And I told him what I wanted to say, and he said, no, I'm fine with that. I said, well, I appreciate that. I thought you were, but I just wanted to make sure. And so I spoke about, you know, what I believe about the King James. And I told this person that had called me, I said, anybody that I speak for, as long as they don't tell me that I can or cannot say certain things, as long as they don't dictate to me and limit me, then I'm fine, that I will go. If it was a Catholic church that invited me to speak about the Bible and the or invited me to speak about the human body and you know, how its relationship to DNA in the Bible or whatever, if they invited me to come in and speak, I would do it. I absolutely would do it. You bet I would. To get an opportunity to stand before people who may have never heard the real gospel in their life and present that to them, I'm in 100%. I remember, and I'm going to go ahead and mention this person's name because they're dead now, but I remember several years ago, we got invited to speak at a prophecy conference that was being held down in Dallas, Texas. Now, I will say to you that this particular conference, it just seemed like it was poorly, they didn't do a good job putting it together. I'll say that. They did it at a hotel that it was right next to the airport, but in order to get to the hotel, you had to go, when you're driving your car, you have to go through the first layer of airport security, and that is, you have to go through a roadblock, and, you know, they ask you, you know, where are you flying, you know, can we see your tickets or whatever. And that was kind of annoying, and so a lot of people didn't come simply because of that. But anyway, I didn't know at the time who had organized this, but then I got a call from, some of you will remember the name of Doc Marquis. Doc Marquis was, let's see here. Anyway, Doc Marquis was somebody that, I mean, this guy goes back into the 90s in his work with the Prophecy Club. He claimed to be someone who had been born into one of these Illuminati family lines. I'm sure that you probably have heard of stories like that. Doc Marquis, a lady by the name of Arizona Wilder. I'm trying to remember, there's a couple more names. Another man, Fritz Springmeier. And I can't remember the name of another one. But anyway, these four people all claimed that they were bred into these families, and was groomed and raised during their childhood to participate in satanic rituals, and that they would be part of the elite bloodlines, the seven bloodlines that was going to be the rulers of the New World Order. Now, I was talking to one of the ladies. It wasn't Arizona Wilder. It was somebody else. But this woman, she had an affair with Fritz Springmeier, and she knew Doc Marquis. And She said Doc Marquis has what's called dissociative identity disorder. By the way, while I'm talking and saying this, I'm going to let you pick me out a topic to talk about in the time that we have. I know I'm short on time, but I just figured, you know, I just got done doing these radio broadcasts with Southwest Radio, so I'm going to let people pick out what they want to talk about. Send an email to PastorMikeOnline@gmail.com. It's right down here. PastorMikeOnline@gmail.com on a question that you have about something in the Bible. Don't send me a video to watch. I can't watch it right now. Ask me a question about something in the Bible, all right? And I'll be monitoring that email address. Meanwhile, back at the ranch, I do remember that Doc Marquis is the one who called me and asked me if I would speak at this conference in Dallas, and I said, yeah. So anyway, this before all of that happened, this lady had called me, and I recognized her name as being one of these people that supposedly were in these, was in one of these seven Illuminati bloodline families, like the Collins family and I don't know what all else. And that they suffered, according to them, and part of this, I believe, ritualistic child abuse, child sexual abuse. Now, during the course of this conversation, she mentioned Doc Marquis's name and said that he had a psychological or psychiatric or psychotic disease called dissociative identity disorder. We used to call it paranoid schizophrenic multiple personalities. But now it's called dissociative identity disorder. I've had experience in dealing with dissociative identity disorder by way of a young lady that a family in our church took in as a foster child. She was in her mid to late teens at that time. She really liked Lisa and I, and she had asked at one time if she could stay with us for part of the time, and we talked with the family, and they were all fine with it and so on. And I kept noticing that sometimes she would talk baby talk, sometimes she would just flip right in front of you and be this really mean looking person. One of her personalities, we didn't know that she had DID at the time, but one of her personalities was a woman that could lie and beat any lie detector test. And so, and it come out years later that the reason she was that way was because as she was growing up, she never really knew her dad because her dad had been murdered. Her mom, her own mother, and any man that her mother brought into the house, they didn't have a problem at all in including their three children one of which, you know, was part of our church, didn't have a problem at all involving one or all of the children in their dirty deeds. And this went on who knows how long, till I think finally the mom died of a drug overdose or something like that. She had a horrible, horrible childhood. And there was a time she was staying with another pastor and his wife that I knew, and it became apparent that she was having some serious problems. They had her checked into a psych ward down south of us, and this is what all came about, that she had dissociative identity disorder. And so I had some experience with that, and I knew that the person would go from one personality right into another, and that one of the personalities, as I said, is a very gifted liar and will basically lie to do everything it could not to be exposed and found out for what was going on. So anyway, this woman told me that Doc Marquis had dissociative identity disorder, as well as her. And she said, Fritz Springmeier has it, Arizona Wilder has it, a lot of us Illuminati children have it. Now, things are starting to make sense with me, because I looked into Fritz Springmeier a little bit. I'm going, okay, I'm wondering if he does have some sort of information that, you know, could be used as being, you know, true information about, you know, the workings of a clandestine group called the Illuminati. But the more I looked into him, the less I liked him. They threw him in prison. And, of course, when he got out of prison, he said, that was all the Illuminati. They were trying to get rid of me. They were trying to have me killed in prison. They wanted me locked up in prison because I'm exposing them. Well, what happened was he got involved. I think he was in Northern California or Oregon, one of the two, or Washington State, anywhere in the Pacific Northwest. He was up there, and he had joined a militia group, a paramilitary militia group up in that area that, you know, they all say that the government's evil and we need to overthrow it and, you know, we're going to just take over and we're going to let what's right and true run America. And I'm hoping it's never one of those groups. Because what they did was they needed money. This organization that Springmeier was a part of needed money. And they figured that banks have money that they need. And banks are evil, right? Banks are evil. So they don't think anything's wrong with what they're doing. They set it up to where they were going to rob a couple of banks while all of the law enforcement in the area was on one end of town. They would be on the other end robbing banks. And what they did was they arranged, they bought the material, they set it up, and they, on one end of town, they blew up an adult bookstore there. Well, that got all of the law enforcement, first responders, everybody's over there dealing with this bombing of this adult bookstore. Meanwhile, the other group is over here robbing the bank to get money because they need guns. They need, they needed daily support to, you know, because they've got a big compound and they're training guys and all this stuff going on. So they got the money. Well, the police started doing the investigation, and they traced it down to this particular group, and they actually got individual names, probably because they had somebody embedded. The FBI probably had somebody embedded inside that group. So anyway, Fritz Springmeier was one of the guys that was involved in that. And he went to trial. They found him guilty. And they put him in prison. And again, he's claiming that it was trumped up charges. He didn't do anything wrong. And they just got him in there to shut him up. That's what they did. Folks, those are called delusions of grandeur. Okay, where you elevate yourself and the things that you do as being very, very important. And that's why everybody hates me. Yeah, that's it. So anyway, that's just a little bit about this Illuminati thing. Doc Marquis has DID, and this lady that's on the phone with me tells me that one of Doc's personalities is a homosexual. And I went, okay. And so we talked a little bit longer, and that was it. So a few months later, we get invited to speak at a prophecy conference down in Branson, Missouri. And I'm going, great, I love Branson. It's a good vacation spot, a lot of stuff to do there. And we go down there, and of course, we've got our table, and we've got all these DVDs stacked up there. We're just giving away like crazy. I mean, we gave away thousands of DVDs. We were the only speaker there, the only ministry represented there that wasn't selling anything. And so our table was full all the time. I go into the conference hall lobby at this hotel in Branson, and there's Doc. And he knows me. He called me one time and made contact with me, and he said, Pastor Hoggard, I really love you, and on and on and on. Okay. Now, you have to remember, I've already heard this from a friend of his. And Doc just is there, and he's setting up his table. And there is a young man, I would say about 20 years old. And Doc introduces him as his friend and traveling partner. And I looked at Doc, and I looked at this young man, and I went, okay. Okay. I kind of get it. So, I didn't say anything. Didn't make a big deal about it. Could be wrong, and so I don't want to take the wrong conclusion. So then, Doc invites me, is part of inviting me to go to this conference in Dallas, Texas. And in Dallas, there was several speakers. Me, Doc was there. Let's see here. Tom Horn was there. Noah Hutchings and several other guys from Southwest Radio. They were there as well. I think one of them was the keynote speaker. Rob Skiba was there. Some of you might remember him. He got way off one time by jumping onto the Hebrew Roots bandwagon. And then from the Hebrew Roots platform, he jumped right into the flat earth. And instead of him teaching anything about the Bible prophecy, Christ is coming back soon, messianic prophecies being fulfilled in front of our eyes, everything he says is related to flat earth. Everything. So, I had already had an interaction with Rob Skiba at a previous conference. And our interaction did not go well because he hated the King James. And I went on his website and looked at his doctrinal statement. It was horrible what he believed about the Bible. And I questioned him on it. And I even made comments online about him. And I was warning people, don't fall for his teachings. Go, and I showed him from his website what he believed about the Bible. And it was way off base. So anyway, Skiba doesn't like me. And I've made, you know, public statements against Rob Skiba. And it was on the King James Bible issue. So, before the conference in Dallas, I get a phone call from Doc Marquis. And he said, "Pastor Hallgood, you know I love you so much. I think you're a man of God." And he said, we heard that there is, you know, there was something that had happened between you and Skiba. And I briefly explained what had happened. And he said that, I don't remember his exact words, but the gist of what he was saying was, "We're concerned that you're going to bring up the Bible issue and try to use your time of speaking to bring people over to your side of believing in the authorized Bible." And he's, you know, he's trying to be political. He's trying to be like he's on my side. And, you know, "Pastor Hallgood, you know I love you. And, you know, I just think the world of you. And, you know, your doctrine and everything you say, I just love it." And I'm going, at one point I asked him, "Doc, let me ask you a question. Who told you to call me?" "Oh, nobody. Nobody told me to call you. I just, you know, I'm just checking." And I'm like, "What do you have to do with this conference anyway? I mean, I know your name is on the list of speakers, but so is mine. But no one's asked me to call the rest of the speakers and ask them if they were King James." And I said, "Doc, who told you to call me?" "Oh, no, nobody. Nobody did. Nobody did." He said, "I just wanted to make sure that the topics that you gave us that you were going to speak on, you're going to speak on." And I said, "Doc, let me tell you this." I said, "I am going to stick 100% with what I told you. The topics that I was going to speak on, I'm going to stick with that." I said, "Now, it always works out that in the things that I speak of, I am going to mention that I believe that my Bible is perfect, that it's 100% true, that it has no errors in it whatsoever, and that it's the King James Bible." I said, "Now, if you have a problem with that, you let me know right now. And all I'll do is ask you to reimburse me for the airplane ticket that I got for me and my wife. And I won't show up at your conference, because the last thing that I want to do with anybody is start a big fight over the Bible issue. I said, so you just let me know and there'll be no hard feelings, but send me a reimbursement for my airline ticket. I've already bought it. And that way, if I cancel it, I'll at least have the reimbursement for it. And I won't show up, and I won't say a word. Oh no, Pastor Hoggood, we want you there. We want you there. We think the world of you. And I'm like, okay, but I'm pretty sure someone put him up to calling me. And so I've had that happen before, where people were afraid that I was going to say King and James in the same sentence. And they didn't want that. So that was basically the last time I ever got invited to speak at one of those big conferences. Okay? I guess I was on the blacklist after that. Never got invited back. And I'm fine with that, because if they don't want me there, I certainly don't want to go there and create a bunch of problems. I don't. But if I get invited and no one tells me what I can and cannot say, I'm going. So anyway, like I said, Southwest Radio has been good to me over the years, and my love and appreciation and respect for Brother Noah Hutchings and the stand that he always took has always been foremost in my mind, and it's because of him and the current staff at Southwest Radio that I still do things for them. Now, let's see if anybody, has there been anybody send an email? Let's see here. Let's see. Oh boy, we got a few of them here. Joni or Johnny. What does the number 66 mean? Well, let's see here. Let's go to the Word of God, King James Bible. You can get the software, purebiblesearch.com. Download it for Windows, Linux, or Macintosh, and install it, and you've got it for free. First of all, 66 indicates to us the exact number of books that's in the Word of God. So we could rightfully say that 66 represents the Word of God. If we were to break down the number 6, let me do this. Some people say that 6 in and of itself is a bad number. It's bad. 6 is bad. 6 is a number for man, and man is evil. Well, not necessarily. If we look at 1 Timothy 3:16, let's count this. Without controversy, great is the mystery of godliness. God was manifest in the flesh, justified in the spirit, seen of angels, preached unto the Gentiles, believed on in the world, received up into glory. So, on this part, if I were to sort of connect the Bible into this same thing as well, where it says God was manifest in the flesh, I can show you from John, the Gospel of John, where it says the Word became flesh. Let's see, where is it? And dwelt among us. Where is that? Come on, where is it? Light shineth in darkness. Then came for a witness to bear the light. He came in his own received him not. Men received him, to them gave he power to become the sons of God, even to them that believe on his name. There it is, verse 14. And the Word was made flesh and dwelt among us. So the first thing that Paul mentions in 1 Timothy 3:16, you know, when he says this, calls this the mystery of godliness, God was manifest in the flesh. And right here, that's what it says. And the Word was made flesh and dwelt among us. And we beheld his glory, the glory as of the only begotten of the Father, full of grace and truth. We could also say that the book of Isaiah, we know, has 66 chapters in it. And it does seem to be a model of what the Bible is to look like. When you are reading through Isaiah and you get to Isaiah 40, Matthew is the 40th book of the Bible. So right here, you have comfort ye, comfort ye, my people, saith your God, speak ye comfort to Jerusalem, and cry unto her that her warfare is accomplished, that her iniquity is pardoned, for she hath received of the Lord's hand double for all her sins. The voice of him that crieth in the wilderness, prepare ye the way of the Lord, make straight in the desert a highway for our God. That is precisely what John the Baptist preached in Matthew, which is the 40th book of the Bible. Isaiah chapter 40 basically is a foreshadowing and a prophecy concerning what was going to take place in the 40th book of the Bible. So, I would say that just on its surface, the number 66 represents God's communication with man. Think of it like this. Remember some of the things I've showed you. The mouth, inside my mouth, I have 32 teeth and one tongue. That's 33. So if I have two witnesses of the same thing, 32 teeth, one tongue, if this guy here represents 33 and the guy next to him represents 33, and I add their witnesses together, I got 66. The spinal column. My spine, I have 33 bones. Out of almost all of those bones, I have a nerve bundle that comes out the left, a nerve bundle that comes out the right. So I have 33 bones, or 33 sets of nerve bundles. One coming to the left, the other going to the right. So when I have 33 sets of nerve bundles that give the body direct access to the brain, or giving the brain direct access to the body so that the brain can tell my arm to do what it's doing right here. Okay? My brain is telling my arm to do all of these weird things. I could do it with this hand too, okay? Do the wave. That is 66 nerve bundles coming from the head down to the body. It was always meant to be that these 66 packages of nerves was going to be how the head speaks to the body, how Christ speaks to the church. The menorah, the candlestick that is in Moses' temple or Moses' tabernacle. You have these seven pipes, which are the seven spirits of God. Each one of those candles at the top is a branch coming out of this main branch going out. There's three on one side and three on the other and one in the middle. That's seven. See, those are the seven spirits of God. But also on each one of those candlesticks or pipes, that if you want to call them that, on each one of those, there's a set of decorations. There's three, six, nine on each pipe on the outside. There's three, six, nine, 12 on the middle one. If you were to take the number of decorations from an almond tree on the left side of the candle, add to it the middle one, you have 39 decorations. Then when you add to that the decorations on the other side, you end up with 27 over here. 39 plus 27 equals 66. And I don't have my woo sound effects, but anyway, that's what you have. Okay? Oh, I love this stuff. Blesses my heart. I love this stuff. So anyway, I would say that the meaning of the number 66 would have everything to do with God and how He speaks to His people. Now, again, some people say, well, you know, man was created on the sixth day. Yeah. But also, six is a number for preparation. In Genesis 6, we have the sons of God marrying the daughters of men. That's not too good. But that facilitates then God directing Moses to spend time and prepare by building an ark and filling it with food and bringing all the animals in. Six is the number for preparation. So anyway, hope that answers your question. Let's see here. Let's find another one. Okay, we did that one. Steve. How you doing, Steve? PM. Would you... which stands for post-meridian. PM, would you please explain why we, as Christians, still follow the Resurrection Sunday on the same day as Easter and not according to the Jewish calendar? May have mentioned this in the past, but I forget. Thanks. Steve, your buddy. All right. First of all, what I'm not going to do is I'm not going to promote to somebody who they honestly believe that God has convicted them to not have anything to do with Easter or Christmas observations. Okay, they don't observe Christmas, they don't observe Easter. What I'm not going to do is defile your conscience, tell you how wrong you are, and tell you to get with the program and things like that. I'm not going to do that. Okay? You have a right. We have looked into the perfect law of liberty. And the biggest thing that I'm going to say is that there is no commandment anywhere in the scripture that commands you to have an observance of the birth of Christ, which I look at it like this. The birth of Christ is his first coming. Okay? It's what initiates Christ's first coming. The death of Christ is what some would say they are observing when it comes to this whole Easter thing or Resurrection Sunday. Okay? So I would not defile your conscience and say that you have to, there's some law in the Bible and you have to observe Easter and you have to observe Christmas. I would never tell anybody that. Nor would I ever tell anyone that they are not allowed to have any observance whatsoever of the first coming of Christ, his birth, nor would I ever condemn anyone for having an observance of Christ's crucifixion coupled with a celebration of his resurrection. Okay? I would never do that. Since there is no commandment in the scriptures either way, and there's not, there is no scripture that forbids anyone from commemorating Christ's birth. After all, two of the four Gospels speak of the birth of Christ. That in itself makes it significant because it's spoken of by two witnesses. Okay? So, I would never tell anybody, you do what? You observe Easter? You had Christmas? Oh, you pagans. You pagans are going to hell, man. I'm telling you, you are. That's called legalism, is what it is. The people who first really tried to drive that home or tried to infiltrate into Christianity this doctrine that if you had any observance of Christ's first coming or any observance of Christ's death and resurrection, then you were a heathen, you were a devil worshiper, and you are going to hell. And I'm talking about guys like Herbert W. Armstrong, Garner Ted Armstrong. Let's see, who else was doing this? I don't remember all of them. But these guys were coming out with Easter's pagan, Christmas is pagan, and you know, God told us don't do what pagans do. Well, pagans also eat pancakes. Does that mean that I can't eat pancakes? No, it doesn't mean that. Now, having said that, I will say this. On Easter Sunday, we had a really good size crowd at our church. Pretty good number. And I didn't really think of it until afterward. Okay? But anyway, suffice it to say that most people in America understand and know that even though it's not a holiday where because it falls on Sunday, you don't have to give everybody a day off. The banks don't close on Easter. The banks are automatically closed every Sunday. Okay? Because of what everybody in the country knows, that there is an Easter coming, and it's going to be on such and such a date. The date changes every year, and I don't want to get into that. But because that's the expectation that everybody has, and if they were to ever ask someone, if somebody was to ask me, in fact, I've shared this story, was standing in line at Walmart Pharmacy one time, this is several years ago, and they were talking about that particular day being Good Friday. And there was this young guy standing there in front of me, and he said, "What is Good Friday anyway?" Well, obviously this young man's never been to church. So I, either that or he's Catholic. Anyway, so I explained, I said, it is the day that many Christians, I didn't say all of them, that many Christians observe as the day, and God just opened this door open for me right here. This young man, I don't know him from Adam. Hopefully what he heard from me made him curious enough to go look into it. But it's the day that they mark and celebrate as the day that Christ died on the cross and bringing an atonement for man's sins. And I said, then Easter Sunday is the Sunday that most Christians observe and celebrate as the day that Jesus arose from the grave, like arising in the east. Is it possible that the word Easter doesn't really have anything to do with Esther or Ishtar, but that it has something to do with him coming in the east? Something to think about. So I was able to explain to this young man the death, the burial, and the resurrection of Jesus Christ. You know what that's called? The gospel. Okay? And so he said, "Oh, okay, yeah, that kind of makes sense." Now, what I'm saying is, there is an expectation by basically everybody that Easter has something to do with Christian religion. Not the bunnies and not the eggs and not the, all that stuff that people do, but that the observance of the resurrection of Jesus Christ, you know, on a Sunday, during a Sunday service, there is that expectation. Now, I've got all these people in my church that don't normally come. What am I supposed to do? Tell them, "Excuse me, everybody, if you're here because it's Easter, I'm going to ask you to leave because we don't do that." I'm not going to do that. Are you kidding me? I don't care what brought them in. I've got them in the church. And you go back and you listen to every Easter or resurrection service that we've had since we started streaming. You will always hear me preach the gospel of Jesus Christ. And in times past, I knew for a fact there was at least one person there in those services that I was preaching right to. So far, he's never gotten saved. But I preached right to him. every time. He didn't come this last Sunday. So that's the Christmas part, or the Easter part. Now, and again, you're going to be hard-pressed to find me on any given, quote-unquote, Easter Sunday. You're going to be hard-pressed to find or hear me saying, Happy Easter to everybody. Join us on Easter Sunday. No, I call it Resurrection Sunday. What does it commemorate? What does it mark? It marks the first day of the week when Mary and Martha went to the tomb and they found the tomb empty. Okay? And that's how I say it. That's how I represent it. Now, if you can, and I know that I don't believe Steve or any others is accusing me of false doctrine or heresy or anything like that. But if I take that whole service and I use it as an opportunity to teach about Christ's death, what is death represented, why should there be blood there, and all of the things that pertain to that particular Sunday, Resurrection Sunday, I take that opportunity, that morning services, Sunday school and the morning worship service, to teach and to preach Jesus Christ and Him alone. His death, His burial, His resurrection. Why? Because there is an expectation, even from most lost people. Well, what? I thought this was Easter. You're saying you don't do that? I don't make sense. That's just what I do. Christmas, same way. I don't preach on how happy everybody's going to be when they get to open their presents. I don't preach about how Santa Claus is a positive image. I don't do that. I talk about what's called the Advent, the first Advent of Jesus Christ. Now, there's going to be a second Advent. He's coming again. But to have that opportunity, especially when Christmas falls on a Sunday, to have that opportunity to preach and teach the first coming of Christ and how the angels announced His coming and worshiped Him and how the shepherds were sent by the angels to see the baby Jesus, see those things which came to pass, and the symbolism of Him being in a manger, the symbol of Him being swaddled in His swaddling clothes. And then the shepherds going out from that place, going all up and down Bethlehem, noising this abroad. They went and told everybody what they had seen, and that they had been visited by angels. Again, you're not gonna hear me wishing everybody, I hope you get all the presents that Santa Claus has for you. You don't hear me talking like that. I keep it, and sometimes I will say Feliz Navidad instead of Merry Christmas. The reason being is I kind of don't like the word Christmas, Christmas. I don't like it. So if I say Feliz Navidad, that is a lot more accurate. Feliz means happy. Navidad refers to His nativity. Where was He born from? Nazareth. So anyway, that's my take on it. I'm not saying every preacher is like that, but that's why I do what I do, is I take the opportunity of the times that come into our lives, and I take the opportunity to preach what they're supposed to be about. Easter Sunday is supposed to be about Christ risen from the dead, having victory over the cross, or the cross itself. Then I, when it comes to Christmas, same thing. It's the opportunity to tell everybody who it is that came into the world then. It was Jesus Christ. And why is he coming? Is this prophesied in the Old Testament? So on and so on. And that's just how I do it. And like I said, there's an expectation from lost people that this is some sort of religious holiday. So instead of hiding under a bushel and refusing to come out simply because it's December 25th, to me, it does the gospel an injustice. That's sort of how I feel about it, all right? I apologize I got to leave so soon. Not giving you much today, but getting a busy, busy, busy schedule today. And I hope you've enjoyed being... Where is my music here? I hope you've enjoyed being... sharing this day with me. I love you. You're the reason why we do what we do. There is a new Watchmen broadcast out. You've got to watch this freaky, freaky, familiar spirit, devil spirit. Oh, my goodness. Never seen anything like it. Anyway, hey, we will see you tomorrow night, 7 p.m. Central Time, for our online Wednesday night Bible study. In the meantime,